Good morning, and welcome to the New Life broadcast brought to you by the Emmanuel Baptist Church. We hope you'll listen in every Sunday at 9:30 on 93R. Emmanuel is located at 1710 23rd Street near the City Park in Parkersburg. If you have a question or desire more information, call us at 304-485-5171. Our website is www.ebcwv.com.
We're in the third week on a series on our mission statement that Emmanuel seeks to offer life to the world. The banners actually correspond now to the mission statement. The front banner is loving God. That's where it all begins. You've got to fall in love with God. It's got to be first, foremost, center. When they asked Jesus what's the most important command, he said, love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. If we love God, then last week we looked at the idea of including others. We're going to figure out ways to include people. You may not agree with them. You may have real issues. But you Christians will look for ways to include people, not to make them feel like they're different or outsiders. Sadly, a lot of churches have that reputation of being judgmental, of being people who draw lines, and if you're not in the right place, then we're going to treat you differently. But Jesus always included people. He always included the outsiders, and we have to do the same. Today we look at fellowship groups, the whole idea of church. Why church? Is it important? For the last 2 years, two to three years, have been challenging for churches, and you all know why. We went through a global pandemic. COVID shut down the world, shut down our work, shut down churches. So we adapted, and amazingly now we're online. Prior to COVID, we were on the radio. Now because of an amazing AV team, they've with the cameras, and they just added a new camera to our arsenal. So they just do an amazing job. So we came back together. We were able to gather again. So, which, by the way, gathering together without a mask. I'm sorry, but let it sink in. We're here. We're together. But every church in the country has experienced almost the same thing, and that is every church lost one-third of the people that used to come in person. And I've studied it, and I've read articles, and it's almost across the board. Now, that's true for us. We have about a third less people physically present. Now, we picked up a couple of hundred of people, views online, so it's hard to balance where it all is, but where are the folks that used to be here and are not here anymore? I think a lot of some folks just stayed online. They like that. They like now some people are online, like Calvin and Judy Florence. I know they're listening. They're very faithful, and Calvin has some health issues, and so they tell me every week that they tune in and they listen, and I know they listen because if I say anything wrong, I get a note saying, "Did you mean to say this?" I'm like, "No, I didn't. I'm glad you caught that. Thanks for reminding me." Other folks could be here, but choose not to because it's just works into their schedule better to catch us online. Some folks went to other churches. Now, when we all pulled back and went online, that meant that every church is online. That meant it was like you could do online shopping. You could look at 4, 5, 6 churches all around that you never could go to in person, and now you're looking at their service and hearing the message and music and whatever, and you're like, I know folks that said it was COVID gave them a chance to look around. They say, now I like that place over there. I'm going there. And, honestly, as long as you're going somewhere, Emmanuel's not going to be for everybody. As long as you're going somewhere, as long as you're connecting to a church family, that's what's important. And then some people, some stayed online, some went to other churches. Some, I think, are essentially spiritually homeless. They're not going anywhere. They're not connected online. They're not coming in person. They're just out there. They're in kind of spiritual limbo. And so today I just want to ask the question, is the church still important? Is it still needed? Is it still relevant? You know, we are in a time of great, amazing cultural change. Daily, we are overwhelmed by new technology, cell phones that I think once somebody told me that you have in your cell phone more computer power than all the computers combined that took us to the moon in the 1960s. All the room upon room of computers that they used to get a man on the moon, you now have more of that in your little cell phone in your hand. That's how it's compacted and miniaturized. And now with AI, they've got cell phones that are using AI, and it's just downright scary. AI is bringing a lot of medical possibilities and breakthroughs, but there's also a real downside to it. You do have this feeling that computers are talking. AI is essentially computers talking to computers, learning and learning from each other so that they can respond better to whatever situation they're facing. And they're getting smarter and smarter. And so in the first service, I had this flashback. Is it 2001 Space Odyssey? And what's the comment where doesn't the computer say, I don't think I'm going to do that, Hal? Or the computer starts talking back and saying, I'm done. I'm in control now. And we're literally maybe almost there. So it's interesting. We've never been more connected through phones and social media, but we've never been more lonely. We've never had more access to information, and yet few people say they have a purpose or meaning in life. We have a lot of knowledge, but not a lot of wisdom. We have GPS to guide us to every conceivable location, and yet person after person tells me they feel lost. And so I come back to my go-to quote, St. Augustine, "Thou hast made us for thyself, O God, and our hearts are restless until they rest in you." We will never be at rest until we rest in with our Creator. And Jesus said, what does it profit a person if they gain the world but lose their soul? The people that you look at that are popular, that are famous, that are celebrities, over and over again, when you find out about their lives, they got nothing. They got money, they got fame, and that's it. That's not true for all, but it just seems like there's a real superficial aspect to the celebrity world. And Jesus says you can have it all in the world's eyes and have nothing. People have no center, no foundation these days. Loneliness and anxiety is up. Mental health issues are way up. Self-harm is up. Suicides are up. And it occurred to me as I thought about the churches that have impacted my life, they all gave me a center. They all gave me a foundation. They all gave me a passion and a purpose for something bigger than myself. They gave me bearings and boundaries, and all these churches became a home for me. From Grace Methodist that I grew up in, where God moved in my early life, surrounded by my family, went out to Massachusetts, and I got my first pastoral job at North Shore Community Baptist, and before that, I was at University Heights Baptist. Mona pulled the Methodist out. Mona pulled me away from the Methodist Church. She corrupted me in college, and I went to the University Heights Baptist. We got married there, and that's where God continued his call. And then I actually was called as a pastor at North Shore Community Baptist, and then was called to Clarksburg Baptist for 10 years, and then a church at the Mission for a year, and then Emmanuel. Every church, there are people and encounters and things that have impacted me. There's friends that we've made, families that impacted us. 2 weeks ago, we got a letter from Clarksburg Baptist, and they're having their 175th anniversary. Next week is our 70th. They're having their 175th anniversary, and I was there from 90 to 2000, and they asked if I would reminisce about what happened there. And so Mona and I were on the couch, and I'm thinking, what happened there? And we began to brainstorm. And by the time we were done, I had 50 names. I had 50 names of people that just came flooding back into my memory, and encounters and events and things that had impacted me that was kind of dormant in the back there. But all these people that you've been with in the churches that you're a part of, and they affect you, and they make you a different person, hopefully a better one. So here's one thought I have. The church is where God finds us. As I look back in my life, it was the church, because I was in a church or I was at church events, I was in a place where people were coming alongside and pointing to something bigger, higher, more important than just the world. And in the letter that I sent out, the email that I sent out this week, I told you about my snow story, which I've told 100 times, but coming back from a mission trip in Haiti in 1993, the blizzard, we flew into Charlotte, and then they told us that the state was shut down, so we're in a hotel in Charlotte for 3 days, and then a guy in our group named Jay Wolf said, we're leaving. I'm renting a car. And we're like, well, you can't do that. You can't. The state's closed. I'm going. Who's going with me? So we're all like, okay, we'll go. And we took off, and we had this caravan of cars driving through really, really high snow. And on Route 68 outside of Morgantown, we hit the blizzard. We hit a whiteout. And if you've ever been in a full-on whiteout, you can't see in front of you, you can't see beside you, you can't see behind you. All the navigational things that tell you where that you are covered over. I had three students in my car, and I began to pray, God, don't let me kill them. Don't let me kill them. I mean, we had this great trip, and now they're going to, and you can't stop, because if you stop, somebody's going to ram you from behind. And I was in utter despair, not knowing what to do, when I looked behind me, and coming through the snow, were these lights, and the lights went off, and they came back on, and I realized it was an 18-wheel truck. He had rumbled up behind us. He saw that we were not doing well, came up beside us, and then he pulled up in front, and he drafted us. We drafted behind that 18-wheel truck, and he moved us out of the storm into calmer weather. Coming up behind us, flashing those lights was a way of saying, I see you. I got you. Follow me. We'll get out of this. I'll never forget it. If he would have pulled over, I would have hugged. I would have kissed him. I don't care. That's what God has done for me in churches. He found me. He found me at low times, turned the lights on, and helped me to find a way out. That's what church has meant to me, and I'm sure some of you can relate to that. A lot of people say that they talk about spiritual formation as kind of personal. We talk about having a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. The old hymn says, and he walks with me, and he talks with me, and he tells me I am his own. So spiritual growth is often spoken about as an individual focus. I have a personal relationship with Jesus, but there's more. And novelist Anne Lamott writes that when she was young, she had a girlfriend. They were in elementary, got lost in the city. And she didn't know where she was, and she's wandering the streets of the city, and a policeman stops and picks her up, and they're driving around, and she's trying to get her bearings and figure out where. And as they came down the street, she saw the steeple of her church, and she told the police officer, take me to the church. I can get home. I know my way from there. And then Anne Lamott writes this. She said, and that is why I've stayed so close to my church. Because no matter how bad I'm feeling, how lost or lonely or frightened, when I see the faces of the people at my church and hear their familiar voices and see their smiles and feel their love, I can always find my way home from there. There's something powerful about being part of a church family, especially today when everything's changing and there's nothing that seems to be the same. We still believe in the same rock-solid truth that God inspired from the beginning. And it hasn't changed. And people, today, everything's changed. All the definitions, you can't define nothing the way it used to be. And we still believe that Christ is the center. There's a creational order that he gave us that we can rest in. But in the midst of it all, we show compassion to people who just don't get it. And I think God blesses that. Interesting, Chairman Xi in China, he came in 2012, and he's been upping the control of the Communist Party. When he wanted to eradicate the Christian church, you know what he did? You saw the articles. It was about 8 years ago when they did most of it. Remember what he did? He cut all the crosses off the churches. Thousands and thousands and thousands of crosses. The members of the Communist Party would climb up to the church and they would cut off the cross, because what they had heard was this: as people came out of the countrysides into the cities, they were told by everybody, if you want food and if you need help, or if you need hope, move toward the cross. Chairman Xi realized that the church was a symbol of hope, and you need to eliminate the sign. So all the crosses had to be cut off. And so there's no crosses now in China. He took them all away because he didn't want people. Everybody needs to find their hope in the Communist Party, not in Christ. So you remove the crosses, and fewer people are going to go to the churches. Well, my prayer is that Emmanuel would offer life to the world. And life, as I've said, is loving God including others, fellowship groups, and everyone gifted and involved. And I want to read for you from Luke. My go-to passage here is Luke 19, verses 1 to 10, where I think we get an idea. This is my go-to. This is kind of the key ministry passage that helps me understand what ministry should be about. Luke 19, 1 to 10, Zacchaeus and the tax collector. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. A man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. He wanted to see who Jesus was, but being a short man, he could not because of the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore tree to see Jesus, since he was coming that way. When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and he said to him, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today." And so he came down and welcomed him gladly. All the people saw this and began to mutter, "He's gone to be the guest of a sinner." But Zacchaeus stood up and said, "Lord, here and now I give half of my possessions to the poor, and if I've cheated anybody out of anything, I'll pay back four times the amount." And Jesus said, "Today salvation has come to this house, because this man too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save that which was lost." And so the main points that I always make around this is, number one, people want to make a spiritual connection. They're hungry for something real. Zacchaeus was wealthy, but he wasn't happy. He had money, but he didn't have meaning. And so he was hungry for spiritual food, and he literally went out on a limb to see Jesus. And then Jesus has had a focus on seekers. Jesus had like this GPS system that helped him to find seekers. He's a celebrity. There's crowds all around him. He's moving around. People are trying to touch him and talk to him. And he stops at a tree. And he looks up. And there up in the tree is Zacchaeus. Why did he do that? Because he knew among all the people in the crowd, there was one person there that was really seeking him. So much so that he'd climb a tree and get out on a limb to see him. Jesus was looking for the people who were open, not for the prideful religious people who figured they had all the answers, but the ones who said, "You know, I don't have all the answers. I've got all the money, but I don't have any answers." That was Zacchaeus. So Jesus was seeking seekers, and as Christians, we should do the same. And then I've always said that Jesus had the perfect opportunity to preach a powerful message. He's got a crowd. He's got a representative of the Roman Empire up a tree. What a time to preach a message like, you know, "Looky, looky what we got here. Got a tax collector up a tree. Well, everybody gather around. Think with me about what you don't like about the Roman government, and I want to tell you that I'm about to bring you a change." He could have preached a great political message. He could have leveraged that or manipulated that situation in such a powerful way. But what does he do? This transformed my thinking about ministry. Instead of using it in a public way to get his message across, what does he say to Zacchaeus? "Come down. Let's go to your house. Let's sit down and share a meal." Because going to the house implied that Zacchaeus would kick into hospitality mode. Hospitality meant he would bring out the food and the wine. So Jesus said, let's go to your house and have a table of life. And there around the table, in a casual, non-threatening environment, Jesus listened to his questions. He answered them. I imagine Jesus reached over and touched his hand as Zacchaeus began to cry over the things that he'd done. Zacchaeus felt spiritually empowered, forgiven, and he comes out and he says, "I'm a wealthy man. I'm giving away half of what I own, and if I've cheated someone four times the amount." And Jesus said, "Salvation has come." How did salvation come to Zacchaeus? It came in a small group, in someone's home, his own home, and Jesus knew that. And Jesus always, he modeled that by calling out 12, and then there were three of the 12 that he even spent more time with. So at Pentecost, Peter preached a powerful sermon. The Spirit fell. 3,000 got baptized in one day. And then what happened? Acts chapter 2. Same idea. They went inside. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together. They had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone as they had a need. And every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes. They ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added daily to their number those who were being saved. 3,000 people scattered everywhere, and they bring them into a some kind of a fellowship system, probably through mostly through homes. They learned from the apostles' teaching, which became scripture, the Bible. They worshiped and prayed in the temple, public worship, and then it says they met in their homes for meals, for prayer, for worship, and for communion. They were generous with their money, joyful in their spirit, and committed to fellowship, and they grew. So, if we want to grow today, should we do what they did? Yeah. And by the way, Emmanuel is loving, and Emmanuel is generous. And there's a positive, sweet spirit here. But we've got to continue to figure out ways to share our lives together in our homes and in small groups and through Sunday school classes and things like that, because that's where a lot of the connection and a lot of the growth happens. So let me ask you a question. Why do we struggle with fellowship? Why do you struggle with fellowship, with church? I made a list. Number one is pride. Why do you struggle with church? Pride says, I can do it. I can do it by myself. I don't need help. Okay? If you're going to be a Christian, you have to say, you know, I'm powerless and I need help. I had a service for Jessica's father, for Tim. Tim struggled with alcohol, and then the Lord allowed him to become sober, and for 40 years he led the AA group at Trinity Episcopal. 40 years. He stood in front of people who said, I'm powerless over this, over alcohol, drugs, and my life has become unmanageable, and I need the help of a higher power. And then not only was he there to help them as they confessed, but he was also there as a sponsor. And what was neat is the family remembers it'd be 2 in the morning, and Tim would have his clothes on. You're like, what are you doing? He said, I got a call. He was going. He was going out to be with someone who called and said, hey, I just need you. I need help, you know. AA is powerful because it begins with people who say, I'm broken, I'm humble, and I need help. And that's the same rationale for church. Another reason we don't like church is the people. Look, are there people to the left and right of you that are just annoying, that you really don't like very much? There are people around you that they get on your nerves. And that's just a part of how it goes. What's the old saying? To dwell above with saints we love, oh, that will be glory, but to dwell below with saints we know. Now, that's another story. I love that. So we don't go to church because pride, we don't need it, because there are people there. Do you know who goes there? I don't want to see him. Because we're busy, we're scheduled up solid, we really just don't have time. And then I also thought of personalities. There are personalities that don't enjoy social settings. And I've told you before, people are surprised, but I'm an introvert, and I'm not naturally drawn to social places. My natural habitat would be at home with a book, kind of hanging out. But because I'm a pastor, I'm in social settings, and I have to make myself do that. It's not my natural. So some people naturally don't move toward other people. Extroverts do, but introverts tend to be more internal. And so I can make an excuse that, well, it's not my personality. I'm an introvert, so I struggle with people, so I'll just stay away from them, right? No, I need other people. I need my life group. I need churches. So interesting that even the early church struggled with making church a priority. Hebrews 10 says, consider how to spur one another on toward love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. So apparently, even in the first century, there were people. This is close to when Christ was here. Even in the first century, they were struggling to make church a priority. So there's all kinds of excuses we can make not to be part of a church. Well, the final alpha video that we've gone through this series is about the church, and the speaker, Nikki Gumbel, says, I used to think of church as, the two words came to mind were boredom and buildings. He said, now, when I think of church, I think of friends and I think of family. Jesus said, I call you friends, and in the fellowship that I create, you will make friends who will impact you and change you. And when we say yes to Jesus, when we go to our Father, He imparts on us the reality that we are children of God. We become brothers and sisters in Christ. We become children of God. We're part of this family. John 1, all who receive Jesus, to those who believe in His name, become children of God. So we make friends in church and we function as a family, but the reality is that most churches are a dysfunctional family. We're all sinners. Church is not a place where good people act good. It's a place where broken people act badly. And then we have to love each other back into reality. People come into churches and think, okay, churches are where the good people are, right? No, churches are where the sinners are who are humble enough to say, I'm broken and I need help. And that means that we're going to act and do things that are not biblical and not right. It's going to happen, but it happens within this context where we exhort one another, we correct one another, we admonish one another, we encourage one another, and we grow. You know, a lot of people come into a church and they see something that bothers them and they're gone because, oh, I thought a church is supposed to have it all together. No, church is where we're broken together. So why do I make a church a priority in my life? Well, number one, I'm a pastor. This is my job. The old saying is I'm paid to be good and you guys are good for nothing. Church is a part of my family history. I was taken to church from when I was young. Church is where I've met Jesus and I've made friends. Church is also, to me, church is a part of God's command. When he said, remember the Sabbath and keep it holy, God's commanded us one day a week to pull back, to rest and reflect. God says you need to do that. It's not a suggestion, it's a command. And so for me, church is important to me because it's a way that I fulfill what I think God wants me to do. I set aside time. Church is important to me because everything in this world is changing every day, and I just need something solid. I need something that I can stand on that's not moving. And so church gives me a solid reality to build my life on, because it's built on the words of Christ, my Lord. Let me give you a time management principle and a story, and I'll be done. The time management principle is this, very, very basic. You always make time for things that are important to you. Irrefutable time management principle. Okay, some of you work. Do you show up for work? You better, or you're not going to pay your bills. School and sporting events, if they're important, you show up. If you schedule a vacation at a resort, you'll show up. Friends invite you out to dinner. You'll show up. Great show streaming on your favorite streaming service. You'll make time. You'll make time to watch it. But when it comes to church, for some reason, people make excuses. And just don't have the time, or, you know, I just kind of drifted away from it. And I am the last person to ever want to bring any legalism or negativity. Bottom line is, if it's important to you, you'll make it a priority. Bottom line. And for some people, that means that they'll tune it in online. They don't. They're home. They don't do it. For some people, it means, hey, I know it's online. I'll watch it. That would be a huge step for them. I mean, to connect with us that way. For others, it means, hey, you know, I'm going to get out of bed. It's not easy. It's not convenient, especially if you have kids. I remember when we had four kids, and actually, I don't remember. Mona will tell you. She got all the kids together. I was at the church already. She got the kids together, and she hated me for a long, long time. She trying to get kids together and to church is like moving heaven and earth. Really hard. Bottom line, if it's important to you, you'll make time. Jesus said, I love the church, and I've given my life for the church. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it. If Christ loved the church and said it's that important, then it should be important to me, should be important to you. And if Emmanuel is a place where you feel that you can plug in, where you feel it's a home, where you feel you can grow, then make it a priority. Make sure you tune us in online. Make sure you get here. Because your presence, by the way, your presence is such an encouragement to look around and see other people. Man, it's so encouraging. Oh, you're here. It's good to see you. And we have a chance to encourage one another.
Thank you for listening to the New Life broadcast brought to you by the Emmanuel Baptist Church. Emmanuel is located at 1710 23rd Street near the City Park in Parkersburg, West Virginia. Our website is www.ebcwv.com. I'm Pastor Kurt Busick. We leave you with this important word from the Bible. For God so loved the world that he gave us his only Son, that whoever believes in him will not perish but have eternal life. God bless you and have a great Sunday.